And this is the hour. We'll take your questions, your stories with Michael Brain as we talk about the strange and unusual, the road to strange, when we come back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Michael Brain with us, of course, and your stories and your questions we'll go to in just a moment. Michael, of everything that you have come across, have written about, is there that one story that still keeps you shaking your head?
Gosh, you know, I've probably looked at 5,000 stories, but in terms of the paranormal or ufology, yes. This was a recent story about a woman who had a number of different kinds of psychic-related experiences. And they, she and a friend went to the Pagosa Springs, hot water springs, after having had a dinner. And she said they were sitting at the edge of this tub area. And then suddenly there was a bright light that shone overhead. They just noticed that. They didn't know what it was. And then it just disappeared. When they first got into that hot tub area, it was about 8:30 at night. And suddenly now it was wee hours of the morning, like 2 or 3 o'clock, and they suddenly realized they were sitting on the opposite end of the hot spring tub. And she absolutely was adamant that they had been sitting on the other side. Then they saw the light, and then they were discovered they were on the other side. And to this day, she feels that she probably had an abduction experience, and she's a little concerned, a little fearful about exploring it further. But in my interviews with people over the years, I've discovered a lot of things that happen that are unknown to the people. They had the experiences, and they don't know if there were intervening events like abductions. And I suspect that there probably were. So it's these surprises that come from the revelations of people in their stories that they really want to know what happened, but they know something really did happen, and there may be witnesses to it. So it's very interesting.
Were you disappointed with the June 25th government report on UAPs?
Well, I predicted it. I thought it was either going to be the big reveal or the big fizzle. But I see something else that happened. You know, when you look at the history of the modern ufology over 75 years, beginning with Roswell up to the present, and you see that they virtually ignored 75 years of history of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of cases and all that. But something else happened that I thought was very interesting, and I've been thinking about that, and that is this. People who have had experiences often feel worried about what other people are going to think of them, and people are going to think they're nuts for talking about things like UFOs and flying saucers and all that. And people want a little bit of recognition that they're sane, that there's nothing wrong with them, and that what really happened to them, they know that happened to them. And in a certain way, it seemed like with the admission that, well, yeah, these are UFOs, we don't know what they are, it gives these people a little bit of support in saying to them indirectly, you're not crazy. You've had these experiences. Yes, there are UFOs. We just don't know what they were. And I was just thinking earlier this evening in connection with that, do you remember the Lieutenant General John Samford in 1952, right around the time when Washington, D.C. had these overflights of UFOs, these lights? Remember that?
Yep,
and
great
he
case.
He came on, and he was calm, and he was soothing, and he said, you know, nothing there represents a threat to the United States, and we're studying it, and we'd like to know more about it, and we think there's more to be learned, but there's nothing there that represents a danger. And that, in a way, was giving indirect support and testament to people that have felt that they had these experiences and they're not crazy. On the other hand, and just the same as what's happened in June. There is the idea that maybe they know more than they're saying, and maybe not all of it is what we would like to hear. So I don't know how much credit to give them. There was, yes, a lot of disappointment. Yes, there was fizzle. But there was this indirect support of people letting them know that they're not as crazy as other people might think they are.
Let's go to the phones for stories and questions. Sherry's with us in Long Beach, California on the Wild Card Line. Hello, Sherry. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, George.
Hi.
I just have a couple. First of all, I want to say, Mr. Brian, thank you, because, you know, it takes a lot of guts to put yourself out there. I'll start with my first story. Back in the day, about 10 years ago, when I was in my 40s, I was alone in my apartment, and I have to say I was partaking of something I shouldn't have been, and I was up all night, and I did an EVP, and because I had heard some whispers in the back of some EVPs I had done or some videos I had done, and I said, if there's somebody there, I want to know who you are. Tell me right now. And I heard back clearly, Tony, like Tony. It was a whisper of Tony. And I also, on some EVPs, had heard my name, like Sherry. I mean, and I was completely alone, 3 o'clock in the morning, higher than a kite. So I understand what you're saying about, man, nobody believes you. But this was so clear. It was an A-plus EVP. I had my landlord listen to it, and he just handed me back the phone to get away from me. And then another time, my daughter had turned 21, so we went to the Queen Mary. I'm in Long Beach to have a cocktail. And before we got up there, you know, I was trying to tell her about how I'd heard about this one room. And it's on the B deck. It's B340. And this room is terribly haunted. So we're standing outside the room, and we lean down into the grate of the room. There's like an air vent at the bottom of the door. And as I'm starting to tell her, there's a little girl that says, you know, a little girl named Jackie. My daughter's name is Jacqueline. And as I'm coming up to tell her that, we both clearly heard a little girl say, Mommy. It was just visceral. It was all around us, and we just ran into each other, ran away, and then we're like some teenage boys. It was just incredible. So I really appreciate your work and what you're doing. And George, I love you guys. And
great. Thanks, Sherry. Great story.
You know, you're not alone. There's so many people with so many different interesting and somewhat incomprehensible experiences, and maybe part of the message is wake up and take a notice and grow from this.
And the Queen Mary, that ship is haunted, Michael.
Oh, the Queen Mary is something else, isn't it? I did interview a woman about her experience on the Queen Mary, and she definitely, there was two ladies, and they definitely felt that they experienced some kind of entity in their stateroom. And she had said that she had a photo of it. But I never did get that photo. I tried.
Ah,
it's a shame.
Would have been
bad.
Great. Let's go out to British Columbia and Canada. Ken's with us. Hey, Ken, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have two stories about coincidences while traveling.
Okay.
One was I was traveling in Australia and teamed up with an Australian who was traveling by bike around Australia. Had put 8,000 kilometers on his bike, and we explored the Ayers Rock area, and then I came home to Canada and went on another trip to the Middle East, and I was in Israel, and I ran into that same fellow in a bus station in Israel.
That's funny.
Another time, I was hitchhiking home to my island, and got a ride by a fellow who... when I told him I lived on this island, he said, well, I have a book that I borrowed off this lady from this island, so could you give it back to her? So I said, yes, okay, sure.
So, what do you make of it?
So I went back to the island, and I phoned the lady, and she picked up and said, hello, hello. And I said, hello, and she said, is this Healthline's books? And I said, no, this is Ken. I'm phoning because this fellow passed on this book to me, and I'm phoning you to return it. And she says, you wouldn't believe this, but I was just phoning the bookstore to reorder that book.
Yeah. It's really...
I had other experiences while traveling that are quite phenomenal, too. And even at home one time, I had the radio go on. I pulled the plug on the radio, and the music still played. I turned the power off to the house, and the radio still played.
Jeez.
And I left the house.
Oh, my gosh.
Run. Don't walk.
Yeah, well, it certainly has you thinking. You'll... this will stay with you the rest of your life, no question about it.
As a psychologist, Michael, how do you explain these things?
I wish I could tell you there's an easy explanation, but I think I have a little theory, and I think that these things that happen, they're nonlinear, they're not logical, they're not rational, they're not very amenable to scientific study. But with every one of these little experiences, it changes the paradigm ever so slightly, so that that maybe your worldview will evolve from it. Let me give you a real quick example. I remember when Walt Andrus of MUFON was a strictly nuts and bolts flying saucer man, that there was no such thing as abduction. Mm-hmm. We would have nothing of it. And then suddenly, over time, abductions became sort of the norm. So the consciousness, the understanding of the field, the paradigm shifted somewhat to include things that we would not ever consider in an earlier time. And I think that's probably what happens gradually in a lot of ways that changes our outlook and worldview and understanding of the universe, by helping us to incorporate things that are non-rational, non-linear, but nevertheless just as valid as what we discover through scientific method.
What would make someone like Walt Andrus, who was a staunch MUFON mutual UFO director, be a believer in visitation but not a believer in abductions?
That's right, but he came around after time because, you know, you had...
As did J. Allen Hynek.
What's that?
J. Allen Hynek came around, too.
He did. A lot of people came around because of the sheer weight of what you have to consider evidence, even though it's not necessarily rational, logical, reasonable, scientific. It's another way of understanding the universe, and gradually, you can't do it all at once. It's little bits and pieces. That's what I think. I think that we come around over time. Now, can we be misled and be wrong? Well, probably. But I think that's part of the change.
Joe in the Bronx. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
All well, thanks.
Good. Yeah, I'd like to ask your guest if he's ever been to Transylvania. I have actually one of the royal family, a princess, married a while back into my father's side of the family. She was member of the Romanian royal family. There's so much connected to Dracula and Vlad Dracula, Vlad the Impaler. I was just wondering if you were ever curious as to explore some of that, for yourself.
Ever been to Transylvania? Go ahead,
Mike. Really, really good question. And I want to just add something to that story that I told earlier about that fellow that went with his girlfriend to Romania. He said that the way the local Romanians viewed all that was in a totally different historical perspective that had to do more with political power and warring countries, and that their view of that whole story was so different from the American Halloween-ized approach to the whole notion of Transylvania, that there was absolutely a legitimate history of Romania in its own right, and it's not exactly what we Americans, thought about it.
And Dracula was a real person.
Yes. Yes, he was.
He's a butcher, wasn't he, basically?
Yeah.
And I don't mean a meat butcher. I mean a people butcher.
There are those aspects, yeah.
Austin, Texas, we go. Brendan's with us. Hello, Brendan.
Hello. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, George and Michael.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. So I wanted to ask about time slip stories for Michael to share some of those with us. And also, when I hear travel, I think of air travel. So flight crews blame gremlins for inexplicable accidents or failures. So is there any pilots that have talked about ghosts in the machine type things that happened while they were flying? One of the most famous, you know, scenes of Twilight Zone, the movie,
yep.
The guy looks out on the wing and there's the gremlin there.
Ripping up the yeah. Wing. I remember that.
Twilight Zone. Let me comment on your excellent question. And that is, there are all sorts of pilot encounters and stories circulating. Dick Haynes is the perfect person to talk to about that in his huge collection of things. I forget, could you just restate the original question?
About time flips, you wanted to know about
yes.
Them.
Time flips. I wanted to comment on that. The very interesting, excellent work of David Paulides.
Oh, yeah, he's been on
all
before.
Familiar with 411, right?
Yep.
It's interesting to see how he's come around from looking at purely conventional explanations to venturing a little bit more into the supernatural and unknown. And undoubtedly, part of it is part of that theory has something to do with the notion of portals, people accidentally stumbling into, coming across portals. But I want to give you a really quick, really great story of Ron Russell, who was really well known in the crop circle area, and he's alive and well in Colorado. Ron was in a crop circle with a friend inspecting it one evening, and he said he wanted to just leave for momentarily to go back and get some more film, and he'll return shortly. And what happened was he was walking along tram lines, and they merged together. Tram lines don't merge together. Tractor tires don't merge together at a point. And suddenly he said he found himself what looked like a medieval, at the edge of a medieval community where he saw fires in the distance, cooking fires and dogs barking. And he felt like he time slipped into another reality. And he thought he better get himself out of there. And he came back and he apologized profusely to his friend, saying, "Geez, I'm so sorry. I was gone for so long." And the friend said, no, you were only gone about 20 minutes. So there was a time dilation and all kinds of weird things. And he went to take his friend back. He said, "You have to see this. Let's go. Let me show you this." And they go down the tram lines. And guess what? The tram lines do not converge. They lead right up to the car where the extra film was located.
And how do you explain that? And by the way, it was William Shatner who was the star in Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, 1963, Twilight Zone episode, season 5, episode 3. Do you go to Facebook a lot? It's under fire recently, and for the next couple hours tomorrow, that'll be our program, Facebook Under Fire. And then later on, we'll be talking about a haunted home that was really haunted. We're going to come back in a moment with our special guest, Michael Brain, and take final calls with him. And welcome back. Our final segment, George Norrie with you, Michael Brain with us. Michael, what's the easiest way for people to get your book, The Road to Strange, the whole series?
It's offered, of course, on Amazon, and it's also offered at your other usual favorite ways that you buy books. If anybody wants a personalized, signed copy, you should directly come to my email address. Can I give my email address?
Absolutely, Michael.
Okay, so it's Michael Brian, one word, B-R-E-I-N, at gmail.com. So if you let me know you're interested in a signed copy, I'll get one of those right off to you. Otherwise, it's available in e-books or print books, whichever you prefer.
I'm interviewing a person who lived in a haunted house tomorrow. It's kind of our prelude to Ghost to Ghost. And have you ever lived in a haunted house?
No, I have not. Fortunately, I have not, but I have certainly visited some. I had an experience of a poltergeist at a friend's house where something just zoomed across the floor about a foot above the floor. The three dogs all stared at once. The three people stared at once. It didn't hit anything. It couldn't have been a bird. It was a poltergeist something or other. And the woman whose house it was said, "Oh, that happens all the time." Well, okay.
Back to the phones we go.
Me.
Let's go east. Samuel's with us in Arkansas. Hello, Sam. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Mike.
Good to have you with us. Great. Hope you are, too.
All right. Well, I was coming back from a Scottish festival down in central Arkansas, and this has been over 12 years ago. It's been a while. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. We had a KLA going on, and I was coming home late, and I was getting sleepy, and I knew I had to pull off the road somewhere. So I found an old graveyard off to the side of the road, the highway, and so I pulled off in it and right up into one of the lanes, and I turned the car off, and it was a perfect place to, you know, sit because the areas where all the lanes ran in between the grave areas, and the grave areas were on hills, you know. So my car is in between these places, and there's headstones jutting up on both sides of my vehicle now, and I'm sitting in there, and I put the seat back, and I get a couple hours of sleep. And then I wake up, and I turn the car on, and I turn the headlights on. And right at that time, some massive white object makes its way through the headstones down the hill in front of my car and onto the little lane in front of my car and up the next hill, and it moved across there and as one body would, and it kept going on down through the headstones and on out, you know, into the cemetery. And I didn't hear any hoof prints. I didn't see anything of anything else other than it was a light-colored, cloudy object. Yeah, but it looked very solid and traveling, you know, at a pretty good little rate. But
Did it seem to ignore you?
Hello?
Yeah, did it ignore you, Samuel? Or?
Well, it just kept coming, but it came right down the hill and right on the lane in front of my car, and then up the next hill and kept going. But it done that right when I, you know, turn the headlights on, and it just kept going as you know, in one body. It was looked like as if I was looking at the side of a horse. You know, that's how solid it seemed.
Mm-hmm.
But yet there was no legs hitting the ground. There was no head. There was no anything that would say it was some kind of a, you know, beast or something.
Yeah.
But it was a large white object, like a sheet flowing in the wind, you know.
We get hundreds of those kinds of calls, Michael. They're coming in all the time.
Partial views of whatever they are, not entirely complete figures. Yeah, that's fairly common.
Samuel, thanks for your call. Appreciate you being part of the program. Let's go next to Rebecca in the state of Idaho. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello. Great show, gentlemen. And
Thank you.
Before I tell you my little story, I've traveled solo for years, and I have to say, overall, everything, like, almost always works out. Like, I get to a little village. It's a hill village in Italy, and I don't know anyone. It's dark. It's 10 at night, and the store's closed, and then there's a doctor on the little bus to go up to the hill, and he speaks English, and he takes me all the way on a little cobblestone roads of, like, you know, I would have got totally lost. Everyone's asleep, and he gets me to my hotel. Like, those things have happened over and over again.
So you don't think it's accidental?
No. Because it's happened too many times, and people are like, "You're traveling on your own." I'm like, "Yeah, what's the big deal?" I mean, there's always there are all angels all over who help me. Like, I mean, like people angels, you know? And then one time I had a student who had transferred to Berkeley, and I wanted to meet up with him, but I was one of those teachers that was always kind of awkward, like, not awkward, but I felt uncomfortable doing those things outside of the classroom. I just wasn't like that, you know? And so I'm up in the Bay Area, and I'm just so bummed that I didn't set up the meeting with him, right? And I'm with my boyfriend, and we're getting ready to run down into the metro, and who comes running up at the top of the stairs, and we almost bump right into each other at the top of the stairs is my student.
There you go.
I know. I mean, it was amazing. I'm like, oh, my God, I wish I wanted to set up a time, but I didn't have to. Here you are. I mean, I have millions of people.
Instant.
He's right there.
What, as a psychologist?
It might not have happened, but for seconds.
What makes these things happen, psychologically speaking, Michael?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a message, and the message is pay attention. The universe works in ways that we don't completely understand, and there's reason, and things are related, but it's not necessarily in a linear way. I think it just says, expand your consciousness. There's more than what you think there is.
That's true. Let's go to Steve in Everett, Washington. Hey, Steven, were you out at the show by any chance?
Yes, not the recent one, but a couple years ago. It was awesome. I got to meet you and some of the speakers. Really
super.
Good show there. Really, the crowd was really up for it, too. I was really impressed, you know, locally, that we're really into this paranormal.
Oh, yeah, they sure are.
And I've had many, many experiences over the years as a child all the way into adulthood, but I did have a weird experience, and Michael might know more about this. My doctor, I had to get an MRI, and while I was in the MRI, I've had MRIs before. This was like a head MRI. I saw something in there, in my mind's eye, and it scared me. I mean, it just like popped into my mind's eye, and I ruined the MRI. I stood up and jumped up, and they had to do it all over again. And I asked the technician, you know, has people seen things before? And they said, oh, yeah, people report things all the time. But what I saw, I didn't know what it was. It just looked like some sort of, looked like an old picture that I'd seen from a bunch of novels, artwork and novels called Dangerous Visions. And it was like a demon devouring somebody. That's what it looked like. That's what I thought it was. Well, a couple years later, my girlfriend, we had gone into this department store that she just had to go see, you know, it was a new department store. It was all this knick-knack stuff. And, you know, I wasn't really interested in it. But at the end, I saw a statue. And that was the thing that I saw. And I jumped back. And I told her the story. She says, is that what you saw? I said, that's what I saw. And what it was a Buddha in child's pose.
Oh, wow.
And I'd never seen that symbol before. And I looked it up, and it means humility.
You bring up a very interesting point, and I've discovered this in at least a couple of stories that I gathered, and that is that people have, believe this or not, a kind of a deja vu experience. They feel like they've been somewhere before, but what happens is that they've had a view of the future. Of that event. So, in other words, your perception of that view in the MRI was something that manifested itself in the future. It's almost like a deja vu that you had with an event that happened later on. Those are unusual, but they do happen.
Do you ever get a deja vu experience, Michael?
I have not myself had it. But I've talked to many people who have. How about you?
I've had a few. It's a very strange feeling because you could feel it coming on.
Uh-huh.
And you know what the person's going to say, or you know what the event's going to be. It's just weird. It's almost like we're out of a time jolt or something.
Right. And it really happens. I mean, it's hard for scientists to wrap their heads around it when they can't control it and manipulate it in a lab.
First-time caller Rosa's with us in Lemon Grove, California. Hello, Rosa.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Can me all right?
Yeah, get a little closer to your speaker.
Yeah, hard to hear.
Can you hear me better now?
A little bit. Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. I apologize for that. I'm totally blind, so I can't get off the mic.
That's okay. So, I understand.
I was just curious because, you know, I've had many paranormal experiences in my life, but I was just curious if there's ever been any studies that talk about, you know, say you're in, so this happened to me. I was in a car in a parking lot at Kaiser, and I had my heater on full blast. I was taking my mom for a follow-up because she had a TIA before. And so an ambulance passed me by, and it was like all of a sudden there was a real cold breeze in my car, and it got really cold, and my heater was way up. And I found out later, you know, after checking my mom in, you know, I saw the guys from the ambulance, and I was asking them, and they said, you know, and I said, how's that person doing? And they said that they had just died. So I was curious if there was some kind of studies that have been done about that, you know, coincidence about the cold air, the breeze, and, you know, dead people, ghosts, or whatever.
Michael, I don't think there have been any studies done on anything like that.
Could you re-summarize a little bit? Because it was very difficult for me to really hear very clearly. I'd love to have you summarize it.
She came across a person who was dead but felt this cold breeze.
Okay.
This was
that's
happening.
What I thought. Drops in temperature are very often associated with death in the deceased, and especially appearances of apparitions and ghosts. People report all the time temperature drops. So that's one indicator that comes up a lot in, at least if you watch the TV renditions of people researching ghosts and haunted situations.
Let's go to Bill in Los Angeles now. Bill, go ahead, sir.
How you doing, George?
Good. Hope you are,
hey,
too.
Michael mentioned, by coincidence, the 1952 D.C. flyover that is probably the most objectively documented UFO story of all time, in
great
my opinion.
Story. A great
and
story.
In fact, I was coincidentally talking with George Knapp about that just yesterday as far as how objective that is compared to a lot of things. And I see a qualitative difference between that story, because of its documentation, so interesting that the people have talked about tonight. And I'm not saying those stories are false, but Michael, don't you see a qualitative difference between that 1952 situation and most of the stories, interesting as they are, that we've heard tonight?
Well, we didn't talk about that many UFO stories. We talked more about apparitions and ghosts and things like that. Yeah, I think that the 1952 happening was comparable to what happened with the Navy ships. I mean, you know, those were fairly documented. They had good records of what was going on, and yet the interpretations by the Pentagon of what was going on paralleled somewhat John A. Sanford talking about what happened in Washington in 1952. So, yes, I think those opinions were based on objectivity to some extent, much more so than when you talk about ghosts and apparitions and time slips. Those are hard to wrap your head around. So, yeah, I would agree with you 100%.
What's amazing, Michael, how many of these stories just keep coming, don't they?
They keep coming, and as an effect of this sort of big fizzle, if you want to call it that, or partial reveal, is, again, when you give people the feelings that their opinions may be more respected rather than ridiculed, then it's no wonder we're going to hear more stories from people. And the advent of the Travel Channel and Coast to Coast and History Channel, bringing out more and more and more examples of people, you know, taking photos with their iPhones and getting some additional objective measures of things. When you couple people's willingness to reveal more of what happens to them without feeling that they're going to be ridiculed, and you couple that with the more objective means of people using devices to objectify some of the experiences that are happening, it's no wonder that there's going to be more of it, and maybe some of it will be more believable, and maybe we'll get answers.
Absolutely. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.